कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव गुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय गौरानिताय 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 जय गौरानिताय जय राधा श्याम सुंदर राधा श्याम सुंदर श्री राधे जय कृष्ण बलराम कृष्ण बलराम कृष्ण बलराम जय कृष्ण बलराम। जय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जय जय प्रभुपाद। श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। हरे कृष्णा। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टां स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवंश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातां सहगना रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपदान् सहगनाललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कान्ता राधाकान्ता नमोऽस्तु ते। तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वंशकल्पातुरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुवहेव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैता गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा 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 हरे हरे। नमो विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण शक्ति श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी के नाम नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गुरुवन विचारी ने निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाशाति देशधारी ने। नमो विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण शक्ति श्रीमते भगवान कृष्ण गोस्वामी के नाम रूपा दास Hare Krishna. So today we are reading from 3rd canto, 21st chapter and verse number 5. Ruchir yo Bhagavan Brahman दक्षो वा ब्राह्मणा सुता यथा सासर्जा भूतानि लब्ध्वा भार्यं च मानवीम् रुचिर्यो भगवान् ब्रह्मन् दक्षो वा ब्राह्मणा सुता यथा सा सर्जा भूतानि लब्ध्वा भार्यं च मानवीम् रुचिर्यो भगवान् ब्रह्मन् दक्षो वा ब्राह्मणा सुता यथा सा सर्ज भूतानि लब्ध्वा भार्यं च मानवीम् रुचिर्यो भगवान् ब्रह्मन् दक्षो वा ब्राह्मणा सुता लब्ध्वा भार्यं च मानवीम् रुचिर्यो भगवान् ब्रह्मन् दक्षो वा ब्राह्मणा सुता दश सर्ज भूतानि लब्धा भार्यं च मानवीम् रुचिर्यो भगवान् ब्रह्मन् दक्षो वा ब्राह्मणा सुता यथा ससर्ज भूतानि लब्ध्वा भार्यं च मानवीम् रुचिर्यो भगवान् ब्रह्मन् दक्षो वा ब्राह्मणा सुता यथा सा सर्ज भूतानि लब्ध्वा भार्यं च मानवीम् दक्षो वा ब्राह्मणा सुता यथा सा सर्ज भूतानि भार्यं च मानवीम् रुचिर्यो भगवान् ब्रह्मन् दक्षो वा ब्राह्मणा सुता यथा ससर्ज भूतानि लब्ध्वा भार्यं च मानवीम् वर्ड बाय वर्ड रुचि रुचि यः हु भगवान् वर्शिपफुल ब्रह्मन् ओ होली सेज दक्षः Daksha, Va, and Brahmana of Lord Brahma, Suta, the son, Yataha, in what way, Sasarja, generated, Bhutani, offspring, Labdhva, after securing, Bharyam, as their wives, cha, and manavim, the daughters of Swayambhuva Manu. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. O holy sage, tell me how the worshipful Ruchi and Daksha, the son of Brahma, generated children after securing as their wives the other two daughters of Swayambhuva Manu. Purport. All the great personalities who increase the population
in the beginning of the creation are called Prajapatis. Brahma is also known as Prajapati, as were some of his later sons. Swayambhuva Manu is also known as Prajapati, as is Daksha, another son of Brahma. Swayambhuva had two daughters, Akuti and Prasuti. The Prajapati Ruchi married Akuti and Daksha married Prasuti. These couples are their children produced immense These couples and their children produced immense numbers of children to populate the entire universe. Vidura's inquiry was, how did they beget the population in the beginning? Hare Krishna. So, this specific canto actually begins with a question by Parikshit Maharaj. And Parikshit Maharaj is asking a question about the Vidura Maitreya Samvad. Samvad means a conversation or a dialogue that happened between two great souls, Vidura and Maitreya. In this conversation that started in the fifth chapter of third canto, Vidura, actually out of his humility, he did not inquire directly from Maitreya about the Lord's forms and pastimes. That was not his first question. But instead, he started by asking questions related to subjects that are more relevant to the common man. So, he did not specifically ask higher topics because he wanted Maitreya Muni to actually, on his own, explain those topics to him. But as the conversation progressed, he continued to ask questions to Maitreya Muni. The first set of questions that he asked was how to mitigate distress. And then as he continued in that conversation, he questioned about the primary creation, that is called Sarga. And then he questioned about the secondary creation, which is Visarga. And then further, he asked about the Leela avatars, the Purusha avatars, the Vibhutis, Manus, planets, Varnashrama system, time and its characteristics. And I think for the last few months, we've been hearing about those verses in the third canto. Now, why are we hearing about Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, and his lineage? So this specific section of the third canto, starting from the 21st chapter, deals with ideal family life. This chapter is named Conversation Between Manu and Kardama. And this is right after this, the next verse onwards, we will read about Kardama Muni's austerities and his tapasya to be able to have a wife like Devahuti. And the conversation that happens between Kardama and Lord Vishnu. And by his austerities, by his tapasya, for 10,000 years, he will be able to see face to face the Supreme Lord. And the Supreme Lord will give him all instructions and tell him that Swayambhuva Manu, he will not name Swayambhuva Manu, but he will say, he will come, Devahuti will be handed over to you as your wife. And Kardama Muni had this service for Lord Brahma to have children. So just to have children, he did all these austerities to be able to see the Supreme Lord and ask for the benedictions. So In this chapter specifically, Vidura begins by asking about Swayambhuva Manu and his race and his lineage and how it all expanded. In the first verse of this chapter, Vidura uses the word Parama Samata, which means the most esteemed generation of Swayambhuva Manu. And Srila Prabhupada also points out that Swayambhuva's Manu's dynasty consists of great devotee kings. So Vidura is renounced. He has left his the Hastinapur, and he left the palace, and Maitreya is also renounced. So these two renounced devotees want to discuss the progeny of Swayambhuva Manu and how it multiplied, the lineage of that. So is there anything wrong with that? No, there's nothing wrong with two renounced sages discussing about Swayambhuva Manu, because Swayambhuva Manu was not an ordinary personality. And in the previous verses, in 3rd canto, 13th chapter, Vidura mentioned this. He says, Charitam tasse rajasher adi rajasya satama bruhi me shraddha dhanaya vishvakshena shayohi ashu. He says, Charitam, the character, and Rajashe of this saintly king. So he's saying, O best of the virtuous, O the original king of the kings. Who's the original king of the kings? King Swayambhuva Manu was a great devotee of the personality of Godhead Hari. And thus, it is worth hearing of Manu's sublime character and activities. Please describe them. I am very eager to hear. And Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, Srimad Bhagavatam is full of transcendental topics of the personality of Godhead and his pure devotees. In the absolute world, there is no difference in quality between the Supreme Lord and his pure devotees. Therefore, hearing the topics of the Lord and hearing of the character and activities of the pure devotee have the same result. What is it? What is the result? Namely, the development of devotional service. So, Vidura in this verse is directly glorifying Swayambhuva Manu and saying that he is a pure devotee and we should hear about his glories. Anyone who has taken shelter of the Lord, his activities are worth hearing, even among the renunciates. Vidura and Maitreya, being renunciates, are talking about the pure devotees. So Lord does not consider if someone is a householder or if someone is a renunciate. What he really cares about is if someone is a devotee or not. So as long as someone's activities are centered around Krishna, his activities are worth hearing. Now, if we go to the next verse of that same chapter, 3rd canto, 13th chapter, and 4th verse, Vidura says, Shrutasya pumsam suchira shamasya nanavajanasya surabhir iriditorata tattat gunanu shravanam mukunda padaravindam hridayeshu yesham. So it's a beautiful verse. And he answers, Vidura is answering the question that may be coming up, which is, why are we hearing about devotees explicitly? Why there are so many devotees mentioned on the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam? And what's the importance of hearing about them? And we also know there's so many verses where we're just reading the names of devotees, one after the other, because they're coming into the lineage of Swayambhuva Manu or other devotees. So this shloka describes the importance of hearing about devotees of Krishna. It says, Shrutasya pumsa suchira shramasya. There are many sincere devotees who hear the activities of Krishna and his incarnations. Nan avajanasya suribhir iridito rataha. Such people should also hear from their gurus inspiring stories of devotees. So Srimad Bhagavatam is not only a description of pastimes and activities of Krishna, but also the pastimes and activities of devotees of Krishna. Actually, there are more pastimes of devotees of Krishna than even Krishna, and most of the pastimes of Krishna come in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, who are those devotees? Devotees like Parikshit Maharaj, devotees like Dhruva Maharaj, Yudhishthir Maharaj, Swayambhuva Manu, Ambarish Maharaj, there's so many mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is description of these devotees and their character. So by hearing about them, by learning about them, we understand what Vaishnava qualities that they exhibit. The qualities of humility, the quality of tolerance, and the compassion they have, gratitude. So we can learn so many qualities from them. So, and we get inspired. We get inspired by hearing about them. And in the last two lines of this verse, which is very beautiful, that it says, Tattat gunanu shravanam mukunda padaravindam hridayeshu yesham. So specific qualities of devotees is mentioned. Devotees who are completely dedicated to Krishna have taken the lotus feet of the Lord and carry them in their hearts. So that is the quality of a pure devotee. They carry the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord in their hearts. So when we hear about them, we get inspired and we are also able to carry the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord in our heart. So now, do we only hear about the devotees who are in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam? No. It means that it's teaching us that even in this modern society, even in this current society of devotees, we should be hearing about the devotees who are doing wonderful service to Srila Prabhupada and to their gurus. So this not only applies to the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, it applies to all the devotees, all the pure devotees that are right now here, that were there before, and also they're yet to come. We have to talk about the devotees all the time because it's non-different from hearing about Krishna. So the nine processes of bhakti, which starts with Shravanam, it includes not only hearing about Krishna, but also hearing about the devotees of Krishna. Now, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, to sum this up, he says, not only must they hear about the activities of the Lord, but they must also hear about the transcendental qualities of the devotees who are constantly thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord within their hearts. A pure devotee of the Lord cannot be separated from the lotus feet of the Lord for even a moment. So Srila Prabhupada has summarized this, that we should hear about the devotees because they carry the Supreme Lord in their heart and we can get inspired by them. Now, Svayambhuva Manu, why is he the central of Srimad Bhagavatam? Why is he the central of this overall text of Srimad Bhagavatam? We know Svayambhuva Manu was the first Manu. And there are 14 Manus in the day of Brahma. And each Manu lives for 71 yuga cycles. And after that cycle, then there is another Manu. So, and their Manus are changing. And in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is described, those Manus. And why is Manu so important? Because Manu has also given us Manu Samhita, or Manu Smriti is what we call it. And Srila Prabhupada says, in one of his lectures, he says, we cannot trace out the history of when Manu Smriti was written, but Manu Smriti is considered so perfect that it is the Hindu law. The Hindus are governed by Manu Smriti. There was no need of passing daily a new law by legislative to adjust this social order. He said, the law given by Manu was so perfect that it can be applicable for all the time. So that is the importance of Svayambhuva Manu. Now, I want to change the topic a little bit and say, when we look at the examples of these great devotees in Srimad Bhagavatam, like Svayambhuva Manu, Yudhishthir Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, Ambarish Maharaj, they were all pure devotees. But they, at the same time, they performed their duties really well. They were great kings with so much of opulence, right? So a general question can come in the mind of a devotee who may be in a grihastha life, a devotee who may be trying to get his ends meet. He says, how do I maintain my spiritual identity? How do I maintain my spiritual practice while dealing with the heavy burden of family, money, and career? How do I do that? Does that question come to anyone's mind here? Ever? So, how do I maintain that? How do I maintain that balance? Because I read in scriptures, I have to do this, I have to do devotional service, I have to do all these things. And then on top of it, I also have to do my work. I have to do my duties. I have my family responsibilities. So it's a very practical question comes out. So I thought of a framework to share with you all. A framework that can help us understand how we can navigate this. How do we maintain our spiritual identity and practice, and at the same time, be able to deal with this world, be able to deal with the other responsibilities and duties that we have in this world. So you want to hear? Okay, so the framework is called, since we are talking about the lineage of devotees, the framework is called DNA. Familiar? So D stands for duty as service, or duty as spirituality, or duty as divinity, right? Any one of those. So, and N stands for navigating the world. So duty as service is the context. Navigating the world is like a skill. And A stands for ashram or application of that. So let's start with part one, which is D, duty as service or spirituality. So one of the questions often we ask ourselves, I mean, I have done that multiple times for myself, and we struggle with this concept of doing our duty, doing our dharma, right? And we think duty and spirituality are like enemies. Have you noticed that? So a question may come, if I want to be spiritual, I must quit my job. If I want to be spiritual, I must leave my family. A question comes, some of you maybe, right? I know the job question has come to me multiple times. If I want to be spiritual, I must quit my job because that will give me full time to just do devotional service. So Srila Prabhupada talks about this different kinds of vairagya. One of the vairagyas he talks about is called Markata vairagya, which is the monkey renunciation. And he gives the example of a monkey. He said, monkeys live outside, they do not wear any clothes, and they are eating anything that they see on the street, or sometimes in Vrindavan they are snatching from you. So should we call them a Mahatma? No, we cannot call them a Mahatma because they have many girlfriends. Right? So they are not truly a renunciate. So external renunciation actually means nothing if the heart is full of material desires. So if we are always thinking about material desires, then what's the point of just doing external renunciation? It is better to be a grihastha like Swayambhuva Manu, living in a palace with a wife and children, but with a heart fully fixed on Krishna, then rather than a monkey who's always thinking about sex life. So what is the lesson here? So the first point of our DNA, duty as service or duty as spirituality, is Swayambhuva Manu is proving to us, he proves that we can be the king. He can be the king and a pure devotee simultaneously. He knew the art of dovetailing. You heard the word dovetailing that comes out. Srila Prabhupada uses that word dovetailing, which is connecting anything that we do to Krishna. Manu did not reject his kingdom, did he? Later. But he did not reject his family life. He had 5 children and he got them all married. He engaged them. He engaged everyone in his family. So we have to use our current position in this world to become Krishna conscious. So example, if I'm a plumber, then I have to learn to become Krishna conscious by being a good plumber and at the same time surrendering to Krishna. So we cannot successfully actually navigate this world if we believe our duty is a distraction. So if our context is right, if our context is wrong, then what happens? then our duty, our work will resent our work and thinking that it is taking us away from Krishna. But if we have the right context, then we think that this work is given to us by Krishna for his service. So we have to have a switch of this context to understand that our duty is as a service, and that is what we can learn from this lineage of Swayambhuva Manu and so many other great devotees from Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, now let's move to the next part, which is N, for DNA. So D means duty as service. N stands for navigating the world, which is the skill. So if we look at the names that we just read in this verse today, there are two names, Ruchi and Daksha. So we know Akuti and Prasuti were the two daughters. They were married to Ruchi and Daksha. And I thought Ruchi also means the taste. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami highlights that point, that Ruchi. He says, Ado Shraddha Tatha Sadhu Sangha Bhajana Kriya, right? Anartha Nivritti. And then he talks about Nishta and then Ruchi. Ruchi means taste. It also means taste. And Daksha means expert. He's skillful. Right? So to navigate the material world, we need to be both. What is it? Which is, we need to have the taste of the holy name, of scriptures, of our devotional service, of the devotional service. And at the same time, we need to have the skill to organize our life. So we need the ruchi and the taste, and we also need the skill to organize our life. In one of the morning walk conversations, Srila Prabhupada mentioned this, and it's amazing what he mentioned, which is, he said there are four classes of men. The fourth class, he said, are busy fools. The third class are lazy fools. The second class are busy intelligent. And the first class are lazy intelligent. So, and everyone was surprised. What does that mean? Like, they were all laughing, by the way. Prabhupada was also laughing when he was explaining this. He said, Prabhupada said, nowadays everyone is a busy fool. What does that mean? It's like, he said, they are fourth class. But the first class man is lazy intelligent. And he explained that busy fools are simply creating havoc in this world. They're just busy creating things. And we have to become lazy intelligent. What does lazy intelligent mean? He didn't explain that in that, but lazy intelligent means intelligent because they know the purpose of life. They know why we are here. They know who their constitutional position. They know why we exist. And lazy, that they are not working too hard for money and for other material things in their life. And we also read in the fifth canto that we should only collect enough money to keep our body and soul together. Right? So we have to become lazy intelligent. So we don't have to be too busy in our life that we forget to cultivate taste in scriptures, in holy name, right? So we have to organize our life, organize our finances, organize our energy, organize our overall time that we are spending in our life in such a way that we can develop that taste, we can develop that ruchi in our devotional service. So I was thinking of an example of lazy intelligent from a modern context standpoint. So how many of you have heard of the FIRE movement? FIRE movement. F-I-R-E. FIRE movement. No one? Okay. FIRE means financially independent, retire early. It's a huge movement right now. So, you know, many years ago, 10, 20 years ago, people are only retiring after a certain age. 65, 70, they're retiring, right? Maybe 55, 60. But nowadays, people are retiring in their 20s, 30s, 40s. And it's a big movement out there. It's called FIRE movement. Now, what I have studied about the FIRE movement is a lot of people who are taking this fire movement seriously, they're retiring, but they don't know what to do after retirement. So what they're doing is they're finding other ways to make money. So they already saved enough, but still they're finding ways to make more money. I think the devotees are in the best position to leverage this fire movement. Why? Because they can retire with enough money saved and they can focus 100% on devotional service. That to me is a definition of lazy intelligent. Make sense? So you all can look about the fire movement. So that's a benefit of going with the fire movement, especially for the devotees. So let's move to the third part, which is, so we did D, which is duty as a service, N, which is navigating the world, that is a skill, and A, which is the application or the ashram. Now, we have the duty, we have the navigation, right? How do we apply this? What's the application? And most of us live in our houses. We have family, we have children. And what Srila Prabhupada has described us, and also Srimad Bhagavatam describes, is we need to live in an ashram. And for devotees who have family life, that's a grihastha ashram. And Bhagavatam actually distinguishes between the grihastha and a grihamedi. And what is the difference? A grihastha is situated in the home, and the purpose of grihastha is to reach the Lord. Whereas the purpose of a grihamedi is what? Is enviousness. All he wants to do is anything that's in the interest of the home. The primary goal of a grihastha is what? Self-realization. That is, the home is a spiritual place. Whereas the primary goal of a grihamedi is sense gratification. The home is a place of material comfort. The primary center for a grihastha in their home is who? Krishna. The whole family revolves around that. Whereas for a grihamedi, it's the self. It's the family members. It's I, me, and mine. A grihastha sees the family members, other fellow devotees, as servants of Krishna. Whereas a grihamedi wants to enjoy those family members. How does a grihastha approach his wealth? By charity. He gives it in charity. He gives by preaching. Whereas a grihamedi uses wealth for himself by increasing the status, by increasing the luxury. A grihastha values education, spiritual education, shastra. He values coming from guru, sadhu. Whereas a grihamedi uses his education for earning money. That's the main purpose. So a grihastha can be considered as someone on a boat with a captain. And that captain is Krishna or a guru. Whereas a grihamedi is on a boat without a captain going in a direction that he is not aware of. So the difference is not so much the external setting. A grihastha and a grihamedi are both living in a house with a family and everyone. But the difference is in the intent of their living. So lineage of Swayambhu Manu is actually showing us the standard of service by living in a grihastha ashram. How do we live in a grihastha ashram? How do we live in a family life? Right? So we can learn from that. So to conclude, we can say that the lineage of Swayambhu Manu is like a lineage of heroes, great devotees of the Lord. And they show us that we can be surrounded by the fire of material existence, but at the same time, we can be protected by the blanket of bhakti and devotional service. Right? So what does this framework teaches us, D and A? So we should treat our duty as a service to Krishna, to live with the right context, right mindset. We can learn from Swayambhu Manu and make progress in devotional service. We should navigate the world in such a way that we can organize our life, organize our time, organize our energy in such a way that we get time to develop our taste in devotional service. And three, we should apply these principles by living in an ashram, which is a grihastha ashram, and follow the principles of grihastha ashram. If we follow this framework of D and A, then we'll be able to not only organize our life and have peaceful life from our varnashram dharma standpoint, but at the same time, be able to make progress in our devotional service. So I will end here. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I will leave some time for any discussion or any comments. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu. Very Hare nice. You were talking about the Madhusamhita, and it's actually mentioned in the Prashar Smriti, verse 24. It's 592 verses. And in there it says, for the Krita, or Satyuga, are suited the laws of Manu. For Treta Yuga, those by Gautama Rishi are prescribed. For the Dwarpa Yuga, those by Shanka and Lakita. And for Kali Yuga, those by Parashara are prescribed. So that's why when you read Manusamhita, the whole Manusamhita, and the thing is, you find things in there that you can't apply right now in this age because they're very drastic. Like it says, if a woman is raped, then she should be killed and the rapist should be killed.
Yeah.
You know, if we followed that, then it would be, you know, yeah. We would not have a good reputation. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, bro.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for a very nice class. I also want to appreciate you. I saw you on Sunday at a Publix in Tioga, I think is the name of the town, distributing books in the parking lot. So it was very nice to see that.
Thank you.
This is always a question that's on my mind, this idea of renunciation, false renunciation. Are we just a renunciate like a monkey or... Where are we best situated to apply the appropriate form of renunciation so it's sincere and not faking something? And so my question, I see there are some who tend to a lot of action as a way to escape self-reflection, etc. They're just busy all of the time. And then I also see individuals who tend towards isolation and renunciation, but on the negative side of that, as a way to almost escape action or escape that the friction between devotee association, etc., those sorts of things. So my question is, as an individual who still, it seems as though we each have a responsibility to find where our line is, where our balance is, so we are being genuine to wherever we are, but still challenging ourselves in renunciation, etc. And so what advice can you give to help us navigate that, almost like bumpers? If we bump into this, we know we've gone too far in this direction, or if we bump into that, we've gone too far in that direction. If you can speak to this a little bit.
Sure, thank you, Mataji. I think you kind of answered your question when you said you have to reflect of where you are in your journey. And with that reflection, so sometimes what happens is we see others doing a lot of activity. And then we see others who are doing not much activity, but doing more of their bhajan. And we try to compare. But there's no comparison as such. There's no one right or wrong. I mean, scriptures mention about both kinds of devotees. And it's more of our nature or of which path we want to take. But scriptures do talk about service to Guru, service to our spiritual master, right? And I think time to time we should reflect on that. And we should, reflection overall is important for all of us, because sometimes we're going in a certain direction and we don't know what direction we are going until we reflect. So when we reflect, we should think about what principles I'm supposed to follow based on the instructions that have been given to me and based on my nature. And then be able to see that, am I following that path of my nature and also following the instructions that have given to me? There are devotees who have been given instructions to be active all the time, to preach, 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 right? And that's what they're doing. But there are devotees who may be doing just bhajan because that's how they were instructed. All you do is chant. So our scriptures have place for everyone. And it's a matter of a decision on what instructions have been given to us and what is our true nature. And most of the times, those instructions are given based on our nature. Through our spiritual master or through our shiksha gurus and other devotees. So we continue to reflect on that and continue to act according to that and see if I'm going in the right direction based on those principles. And not so much compare and with ourselves, with someone else and say, why is he or she more active and I'm not? And see there's something wrong with me. Rather than it's our nature. And we are acting according to our nature. So, I mean, there's so many senior devotees here. I would love to hear from them as well, what they have to say. But these are some of my thoughts on that. Thank you for the question.
I think the main point, Divyananda, that you just made was what instruction is one receiving from higher up, yeah, from the spiritual master? Even from the temple president, you know, in, yes, the line of authority, that can guide us always, and we're always safe. And then again, when consultation with that authority, when one feels the need, is also appropriate, you know, when a change in one's life, some change occurs, or the time of one's life, you know, but ultimately following the instruction from a higher authority.
Yeah. Thank you, Mata.
You know, a lot of your class today was devoted to how to live in the world of working, and balancing with Krishna consciousness. Just wanted to point out that way back in 1966, Srila Prabhupada gave a very wonderful class about that exact subject. You can find it in the prabhupadvani.org or possibly other places. It's Bhagavad Gita 2.4849. He covered this very simply, very something every devotee can follow who is living in a grihastha situation and having to balance work and who would have to work for a living and wants to also do Krishna consciousness. But this is a wonderful class by Srila Prabhupada, so everyone please listen to it. It's really fantastic. Answer that question very nicely, how to do it.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Just the appropriate amount, I'm sorry. Yeah, that was a good point you brought about engagement. I mean, we all have our nature. You know, this is a reflection of where we've been at, you know, for however long, you know, whether we're consciousness or not, in a daily way. And, you know, it is a process of self-realization, bhakti yoga. So we have to learn how to engage ourselves. Of course, that means taking shelter of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. But, we have to be the one who does that. You know, we have to be, I was just talking to someone about someone else that had a mental challenge, you know. Oh, the medication helps, but then this person with the mental imbalance has to take the medication all the same, you know. So, you know, we have to take the medication, and part of that is we got to learn how to engage ourselves. And it's not just a selfish thing, because by learning how to engage ourselves, we can help others do the same. because that's what they got to do too. So, you know, yeah, we do have our natures, and we have to engage that. We have our intelligence. We train the intelligence of the Shastra. So we can use ourselves as a test case and learn a lot from that as well.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Separate question. Oftentimes when I'm reading the Bhagavatam, I am trying to glean application in my own life, etc. I think we're all doing this. And then sometimes I get to a point and it strikes me like, oh, actually it sounds like all of this stuff, it's really talking about like the men. It's not being directed at me. And so, like Grihastha, Grihamedi, Vanaprastha, even like the ashrams. And so, I'm just wondering, like, yeah, where do the women fit in, or where do I fit in? Or because as we're talking about, I'm a divorced woman, so I'm not a Grihastha anymore. So what does that mean in terms of Vanaprastha, et cetera? Like, how do I understand women as I'm going and navigating through the Bhagavatam? Talking about this topic brought this question to my mind again. It's kind of an ongoing question.
Yeah, thank you, Mataji. It's a big question, for sure. The way I see this is, wherever men are mentioned, it kind of applies to women. Yes, there are some things which are specifically for women, of what Srila Prabhupada has many times mentioned about the duty of a woman. But at the same time, when we talk about Grihastha life, it's equal responsibility of both husband and wife to live those principles of Grihastha life. It cannot be just one person responsible in making sure that the center of the home is Krishna, making sure that the education we are giving is Shastra. So if you just talk about the Grihastha life, it's both have the equal responsibility to make that happen. So when I read Srimad Bhagavatam, and I have two daughters, so I think about that too, as to how does it apply to my daughters, right? How does it apply to the woman? And I think there are principles who may be like Srila Prabhupada has described, men have to go out and earn, and I mean there are principles that we have to follow for men to follow, but then there are principles that are women for a woman to follow. And the best way to learn those principles is by associating with other women who are understanding and reading Srimad Bhagavatam and applying in their life those principles. And some principles are common principles of following devotional service, of chanting the holy name, right? All the principles of devotional service, there is no difference. But the duties can be different between a man and a woman, depending on what role we are taking. You mentioned your position. There can be other women in a different position. There can be man in that same position. So the duties can vary. From a devotional service perspective, it's pretty much the common thing. But it's such a vast subject. I don't know if I'm doing justice in answering your question, but Agatmika Mataji is here, so maybe she wants to talk a little bit about that, and because she's following that principle and applying it in her life, so from Srimad Bhagavatam, or anyone else wants to say something. But I think we should, what I'm thinking is, again, talk to the authority, talk to the guru, talk to our Shiksha gurus, be in association of other women who are following the principles of Bhagavatam, and learn from them and how we are applying those principles. And I think the concept of man and woman, again, in many places, yes, men are mentioned, but it applies 100% to all the women as well. Yes, Mataji.
I find it's an overflow to my television, retired. Devotional service is just my culture. Yeah, so that was really nice to hear that what's going on with the young generation, because even when we go out to preach, the young generation, many of the people are, like you said, retired. You ask what kind of work they do. Oh, I made my money, I'm retired. So it's a good opportunity for us to preach to them, you know. Yeah. So what are you doing with spiritual life? What do you plan to do? So when they tell me that they're retired, I go, wow, 30, I was still struggling to find a job, you know. So that was very, it was good to hear that, so to preach to them. But you said the interest is to go out and make more money because they're bored. They don't know what to do with their lives.
They're either playing golf, they're playing sports, they're just spending time, all time in gym, they're watching TV, they're... So most of them, and it's big in India also nowadays. It's here, the fire movement, it's big in India, and they don't know what to do with their time. And I think that's why devotees are, if the devotees adopt that movement, they know what to do. Devotees have the right goal, which is to do devotional service. And I think you're right, Mataji, we need to preach to them and say, how do you use this? I mean, in the same way, there is this minimalist society, which is they don't buy much, and but what's the purpose? Like, where are you going? Where's the goal? There's no goal for them. And so we can teach that goal. Yes, Mata.
Thank you. Wonderful class. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My question is about letter N, which is the NA, the N. It's actually how to navigate. And you said that this movement, they retire early, to retire early, this tendency, right? Usually in this world, material world, the things work in such a way that in order to retire early, you have to invest. You have to do some kind of investing, and sometimes it requires some gambling.
Some what, sorry, Matthew?
Gambling.
Gambling. Oh.
Because like people do stock market and things like that. So, and the majority of them are like that. They're using this. Because usually if you work 9 to 5, you just make the ends meet, right? And you don't make enough money. You cannot retire at 20. But, so there is a little bit of a contradiction there. It's gambling on the stock market, it's also gambling. That's my question.
Yeah, so, yes, you're right, Mataji, that the fire movement, if it, now we're talking about more financial stuff, but, no, that's okay. The fire movement is, yes, it's investment, but at the same time, it's savings. So a lot of these people who are getting retired in their early age, they're not spending anything. They're saving most of their income so that they can retire and save for the, and it's set for the future. So, I mean, we can get into the details of that, but yes, they're also investing. Now, this, again, I don't want to speak too much about this gambling aspect. I think the gambling, the way my understanding is, gambling is when you go into a stock market and you want immediate results, which is, and there are people who are doing that in this, I'm not talking about devotees, I'm talking about non-devotees. They're doing it every day, they're monitoring. And they are doing it in a way so they can get quick profits. But it's, again, this is, investment is an investment. Investment is also in a, like when we buy a home, that's an investment. So there are people who have homes, they're putting on rent, that's an investment. So investment is there, but then it depends on your intent. If my intent is to do it like gambling, which is I want immediate results. What is gambling? Gambling meaning that I put my money and I want immediate results from that. That's, to me, is more gambling. But when I think about my future and my intent is to do devotional service and organize my life in such a way so that I can do more devotional service and develop taste in Krishna, it's a totally different story there. And that's the difference between devotees and non-devotees. They do it for more money. They do it for more enjoyment. We do it for Krishna, for our devotional service. Yes, thank you, Mata.
I just want to tell a funny story. One time I was out on book distribution, and I gave this boy, he was with his girlfriend, a book. And he said, well, how much this will cost? I said, we take donation. And the girlfriend said, just give her $20. He said, I make so much money. Why just give her $20? So he said, how much do you want? I said, you're asking me a question like that? How much do I want? And I said, we use the money, I don't know, you know, to preach Krishna consciousness, to preach about God. He said, he looked at his girlfriend and he said, I'll give her $500.
Wow.
And yeah. He wrote a check. So there are some good things, you know. He said, what am I going to do with it? I'm just going to take you out to dinner or something. Let her print her books.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so, well. There are good things and bad things, but it's good to know. It really opened up my mind when you said that these people, they have the money and they've retired. Now I can go out there and say, hey, we need tons of money. And yeah, that was good.
Yes. Ragatmika Mata.
What you were just describing about investing in a home and then renting it out, that's passive income.
Yes.
So passive income is different than gambling.
Yes. Thank you, Mother. Yeah, this long-term investment is also like a passive income. Yeah. So we'll end here. It's 9:07. Go ahead, Prabhu.
Well, part of the gambling mentality is, you know, the conditioned soul thinks they're going to get something for nothing and enjoy. You know? But investing is, I'm trying to build something, trying to do good. You know, it's a more and more of goodness, take it one step at a time, trying to, you know, everything's a gamble. I mean, just walking back to the car and starting it up is a gamble. So, but, you know, in the mode of goodness, you're trying to build, it's based on knowledge, and, you know. Whereas, you know, in the mode of passion, ignorance, it's like, woohoo, I'm, you know, it's, I'm the enjoyer, and I don't have to expend any energy for it.
Thank you, Prabhu. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hare Krishna.